A year since Egyptians enthralled the world with the ouster of Hosni Mubarak, more and more people are fearing they're back to square one, facing the former regime minus Mubarak. On this edition of News Analysis, we're asking whether the Egyptian revolution has become the target of a coup d'etat.
The supporters of the presidential candidate Mohamed Morsi celebrating his alleged victory in Cairo. But beneath the festive mood, there is mounting anger among Egyptians over what many of them call a coup d'etat by the ruling military council. They accuse the junta of trying to consolidate its hold at the expense of the president. An Egyptian MP in the now dissolved parliament, Amr Hamzawi, said,
"The move means that the SCAF has become a state above the state with wide legislative and executive powers, a veto on constitutional and other political matters, and stands immune to any challenges."
They have tried to steal the revolution from us. The military council last week made several announcements and took several positions in an attempt to steal the revolution, and the constitutional decree they issued yesterday in order to take power away from the president will simply not happen.
The junta's rewriting of the constitution and its power grab strips the president of some key powers. They include the right to appoint the chief of staff for Egypt's armed forces, the right to declare war, exercise oversight over the military's budget and operations. The ruling military council took over power after former President Hosni Mubarak was toppled amid a nationwide popular uprising against his decades-long rule early last year. The Egyptian people have staged countless rallies against the military council ever since, with one demand: the generals must hand over power to a civilian government immediately. The military has so far failed to transfer power, though it set a date for doing so. With Mubarak at death's door, many across Egypt now fear the military will not be ready to give away the powers it's been wielding for decades.
It means the military council indirectly will not hand over power on June 30th, and it will continue to keep power indefinitely. This period is open-ended. It may take months or years before the military council will write the constitution.
Well, joining me now live from Cairo is international lawyer Mr. Marwan al-Ash'al. Also with us live from Washington, former foreign policy advisor to the U.S. Senate, James Jatras. And with us from London, journalist, writer and broadcaster Mr. Chris Bambury. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to Mr. Ash'al in Cairo. We are getting reports, Mr. Ash'al, that the military is on standby. Its personnel's leaves have been cancelled in preparation for possible protests. At the same time, the April 6th youth movement has warned a Shafiq win would ignite, in their words, a civil war. That's quite serious. So what's your prediction? Do you think that we are going to see a Shafiq win? Is this preparation for that to happen? And will there be what the April movement calls a civil war as a result?
Yes, I think it would be. I would support this idea. There are two scenarios, just to be straight to the point, two scenarios. First scenario, Shafiq takes over, and the other scenario is Morsi taking over. In the first scenario, where Shafiq would take over, this is another rebuilding of the Mubarak system, but without Mubarak, as was mentioned in the report. And this would definitely create a civil war, because this would definitely defeat the aim of the revolution. That's first. Second, the military is never going to leave if Shafiq takes over, as Shafiq is a military general himself. So the military, the junta, would not have to leave power at all, and would probably make even more offenses against civilians. So I think this is going to be a huge collapse to the Egyptian revolution, and I think this will take the country to a civil war. On the other angle, if Morsi wins, Morsi could be refrained very much with the constitutional amendments they have issued. And dissolving the parliament as well has worked against the Islamic movement in Egypt. And I think the upcoming parliament will not have all this representation for Islamists, since people knew their north and have set their north quite well and learned from their first lessons of democracy. So I think if Morsi takes over, this is the only way out for Egypt. Otherwise, probably Egypt is not going to wake up somewhere soon.
Right, so two scenarios discussed there, Shafiq and Morsi. I'd just like to bring in our guest from Washington, Mr. Jatras. One analyst was saying the race should never have been that close in the first place between Shafiq and Morsi. I mean, a lot of people might be wondering how this popular revolution that involved millions of Egyptians and was against the corrupt regime could have resulted in the same regime on the brink of reclaiming power after little more than a year. So why do you think basically this happened? Was this the fact that someone like Shafiq was pitted against Mohamed Morsi becoming so polarized? Was this part of a plan, as some have been suggesting?
I don't know if it's part of a plan. I'm sure Egypt is still a deeply divided society. It probably isn't as close as the vote would have indicated. I'm sure there are many people who did not like the Mubarak government and are not necessarily wild about the idea of a Muslim Brotherhood candidate becoming president either. I think the important point here is that the military clearly wants to try to hold on to power to maintain the structure of the Mubarak government without Mubarak. I think the peculiar thing from my observation here in Washington is the American position on this. You saw the strong statements against the dissolving of the Egyptian parliament from the State Department. It seems that a decision has been made here in Washington that despite our close support and reliance on the Mubarak government for many years, that we believe the march of progress and the march of democracy and so forth means, in effect, the Muslim Brotherhood taking power in Egypt. And one way or the other, I think that's the outcome that the United States would favor. I'm sure the generals are quite puzzled at this stand.
Right, but the main question would be, if Morsi is elected president, how much power is he going to hold? Chris Bambury, if I could just bring you in here before we continue that discussion. Something that our guest there in Washington was saying was basically when he says, looking at the situation right now, a lot of people in Egypt may not have wanted to vote at all because they weren't for Shafiq, they weren't for the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, others would be suggesting that, as my earlier question pointed out, that the military rulers wanted just that, and they were working through their own controlled media and on the ground to alienate the public from the Muslim Brotherhood candidate, and suggesting that the revolution is all about instability and chaos and the Muslim Brotherhood is all about bringing in an Islamic imposed government. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think the Muslim Brotherhood have to learn a lesson. After Mubarak fell, they essentially did a deal with the military. Despite their own history of being repressed under some six decades of military rule, suffering torture and imprisonment. And what has happened as a result of that deal, they have become contaminated and lost much of the support they got in the parliamentary elections when they swept the board. And that is reflected, that disenchantment with the record of the Muslim Brotherhood since Mubarak fall is responsible for the fall in support. Many of those people who voted for other candidates in the presidential election, for instance, Shabibi, who won in Cairo, in Alexandria, Ismailia, I think found it difficult to accept the choice was simply between the Brotherhood and Shafiq. But I think the question now is that the Brotherhood have to look at what is happening. And if Morsi wins, and I can't see anything else happening here, if Shafiq wins, there will be vote rigging. I'm convinced about that. And there's a long history of this in Egypt, and the military was running that election, and there'll be huge doubts over the election result if Shafiq is declared winner. But if Morsi wins, as your previous commentator said, right, the power of the president has been ripped away, the army is taking more and more power, he has to come off the blocks very quickly by calling for those people who are on the streets and overthrew Mubarak to come back on the streets of Egypt to fight for democracy. Right. And they have to be aware that what the army is doing is not just simply taking power back. And this is the answer to your question. I think they're creating a strategy of tension in Egypt where they can pose themselves as the only people who can stave off collapse. And thus we see misreporting, for instance, that Mubarak was clinically dead by a state media still dominated by the old regime. I think it creates confusion, diversion and the rest of it. This is part of building up tension inside Egypt, so right, the army can potentially come in and say, we're the only people that can guarantee order in this country.
Right. Well, let's just remind our viewers the steps that have been taken by the military that have been described as the military's coup d'etat. I'd just like to remind our viewers the dissolution of parliament, the restoration of emergency law, the amended constitutional declaration, effectively placing the president under the military's control, the control also over the state budget, the authority to appoint most senior cabinet posts, the reappointment of the 100-member constituent assembly, and the revival of the National Defence Council, which includes generals, appointing a general as the president's chief of staff. I mean, that's huge. Back to Cairo, Mr. Marwan al-Ash'ar, do you think that basically what has been described as a coup d'etat by people like Abul Munim Abul Futu is actually the work of just the ruling generals, so to speak, or are the ruling generals actually getting advice, support, or even guidance from forces even outside of Egypt on this?
The coup d'etat that was called and was spread over the media recently is because of the powers granted to the military officials that they have the immunity of the normal police granted to the military officials and the military officers and soldiers. I think this is not a coup d'etat, it's just to control the chaos. But there's a more complicated issue that we need to keep in mind. First, the Egyptian community now is classified to four categories. The first category, who are the hungry people, which is the majority, they don't care whoever comes, they need to eat because they're starving. That's the first category. The second category, the supporters of the ex-NDP members, who would probably vote for Shafiq and want stability and all that sort of stuff and so on and so forth. And the third category, who would go for Mursi personally, and whoever was with the revolution as the only option, Mursi versus the ex-regime. So they would go for Mursi. And there's the fourth tribe of the liberals, who are not convinced of this nor that. All those are going to be facing the military rule. There is a definite confrontation, whether now or in the future, whether the revolution succeeds or otherwise. There is a confrontation definitely with the military. The military will step down, and it will never step down without a fight. So there has to be a furious fight. It's either between the vehicle of the liberals, which is currently the Muslim Brotherhood, or between the liberals themselves, who are not organized now in Egypt and cannot face the junta. So the junta is a power, and it is the only maker of the statement, and there are other parties to the statement, which are the civilians and the normal Egyptians. How is that going to happen? We can't predict, because the junta always carries surprises. Since the referendum in 19th of March, where they made a referendum of their own, and they said this is the only legitimacy around and we need to respect it, based on which they issued all the laws and they issued all the decrees and the amendments to the temporary declaration that they now abide to, which is from their own made. So it's a junta-made country, and now it's being run completely by the junta without anyone else in the equation. If this continues, that is going to be the cause of the civil war.
In Washington, Mr. Jatras, speaking about the role that countries like the United States are having in the situation in Egypt, you said earlier that right now maybe the military council is being puzzled because of the fact that the US has been speaking against the dissolution of parliament there. Basically, do you think that the United States has had a role at all in the process that's been taking place? There are a lot of accusations, especially when it comes to Israel's interests, speaking about a new president.
I think American policy could best be categorized as confused, and this would not be the first time. Everybody knows that we relied very strongly on Mubarak and on the military backing him to maintain a peace agreement between Israel and Egypt. People were puzzled. Why did we pull the rug out from under our guy, so to speak? Now, one would think that the United States would stand four square behind our guys, the military, to prevent the Muslim Brotherhood from coming to power. It seems that there's a kind of a peculiar ideological calculation that's been made here in Washington, that people, in a sense, are breathing their own fumes, that they have accepted the rhetoric of democracy and the Arab Spring and so forth. They would like to see democracy take root in Egypt, and if that means the Muslim Brotherhood, that means the Muslim Brotherhood. The military will be pressured one way or the other to step aside, hand over power, at least as far as the Americans can influence them. And we hope, on a wing and a prayer, that the resulting government will still be friendly to our strategic interests and friendly to Israel. Hmm. What the likelihood of that outcome is another guess, but that seems to be what people here are thinking.
Right. Chris Bambury, would you also agree that there is concern in Israel and in the United States when it comes to Mohamed Morsi, that he is not going to be in favor of Israeli interests? Of course, we know that maybe there are doubts about the type of government that Mohamed Morsi is going to have inside on domestic issues in Egypt, but there hardly has been any doubt when it comes to the issue of Israel. The Muslim Brotherhood has been quite clear about its stance on that. What do you think?
I think Israel does not like the Arab Spring, despite statements from them saying they're relaxed about it. I think they are very worried about changes, particularly in Egypt, this key country of the Arab world, and that inevitably the whole supposed peace treaty worked out between Begin and Sadat all those years ago will be put up for question. And I think popular pressure, if the revolution continues, will grow for Egypt to break that treaty, to open the borders of Gaza and so on. And we've seen elements of that already inside that. So I think they are aware that that will come. And I think they're also aware that the popular forces who made the revolution are against Israel, in effect. Whether they're Islamic, whether they're of the left, whether they're whatever, they are against Israel and against the policy of Egypt. So I think they're very worried about this. However, I think there's one other country I think we should mention who is a factor here, and that is Saudi Arabia, another key player that does not like the Arab Spring and has been prepared to intervene directly in Bahrain to prevent this. The Saudis, in my opinion, will be egging on the military in Egypt to take control because they want to break the popular movement, they want to break the Arab Spring because they are fearful of that. And I think there's been talk that the Saudis want to encourage a Pakistan solution, as they call it, which is essentially the military of the dominant power in Egypt, the kingmaker, which of course is what's happened for 60 years. I'll just add that actually the allusion to Pakistan also has another side to it, which is actually the Egyptian economy is going nowhere. The military dominate large sections of the economy. Then actually Egypt could easily end up like Pakistan in a very desperate position as we see at the moment. So I think it's not a great analogy, but I think the Saudis are the other force intervening. The Saudis and the Israelis together do not like the Arab Spring. And despite the war of words, there is more that unites them in many ways than more than separates them.
Right. Well, right now we're getting news from Egypt, Mr. Al-Ashad, that we're going to see the announcement of the results definitely delayed. We're not going to have the results on Thursday as was previously announced. Now, right now, looking at the situation with threats of civil war, do you think that the military council, the authorities, they are going to risk a civil war, are going to risk that unrest from happening and are going to announce the Ahmed Shafiq as the winner? What are you predicting?
They would play on the conscience of the people, and they will play as usual, and they will play on the patience of the people. Egyptians are not patient, and that's the point. And the junta knows this very well. The SCAP understand this very well, and they understand the psychology of the Egyptians perfectly. So they are going to play on some issues, and they're going to aim the moon to reach the highest sky. If they announce Shafiq, they're going to try to control the chaos. And trying to control the chaos is going to be very temporary because it's not going to end there. That's from one aspect. The other aspect, I just wanted to comment on my colleagues regarding the financial interests in Egypt for any foreign investment. First of all, I'm a lawyer myself, and I'm a liberal with an Islamic background. Egyptians do not think this way towards any foreign investment. The psychology of the Egyptian people is all always towards having more investments in Egypt and not pushing investments out. Even the Muslim Brotherhood, this is one of their theories, to pull investments in and not to push it out.
Let's go back to Washington now and put this question to Mr. Jatras. Looking at the situation now, Mr. Jatras, a lot of people have been saying that the solution now for Egypt, as Mr. Ashad himself was telling us earlier, the only way out is for a Morsi win. And that requires, if Morsi becomes president, considering his restricted powers, that there's going to be a showdown and it's going to evolve in the next weeks and months. Do you think that the other Islamic parties, the pro-revolutionary youth movements or even influential figures inside of Egypt will unite with the Muslim Brotherhood at this circumstance to help this revolutionary movement move forward? Do you think that is actually the only option now?
I don't know if it's the only option. I think letting Mr. Morsi win, which is probably the legitimate outcome, would be a better move strategically for the military than facing a showdown by trying to put their man in a way that would not appear plausible to most people. I think in that case, then, you do have a tug of war that will go on for some time between the efforts of the military to try to hem Mr. Morsi in with limits on his power and his attempting to push against those limits and to expand his power. How that works out, I don't know if we can predict at this time. As I say, you know, the Americans think that we can support democracy in Egypt and we would prefer Mr. Morsi to win and still control the outcome. There was reference made to the economic circumstances in Egypt. Remember, the Americans have boundless faith in the ability to control a country's policies by the control of assistance to that country. So I think they think that Mr. Morsi will be reliant on us anyway, and we can keep him within certain limits. I'd also like to add a word about Saudi Arabia. It's true the Saudis are against the Arab Spring, certainly when it hits close to home, like in Bahrain, where you have a Shia majority in that country that needs to be kept under wraps so as not to endanger the Gulf states close to home and Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia has been a primary push with the Americans and Turkey in trying to dislodge Mr. al-Assad in Syria, also in the name of the Arab Spring. Right. I think their position on the Arab Spring is flexible depending on circumstances.
Right. We're running out of time. I'd just like to give the concluding remarks to Chris Bambury in London. Ms. Bambury, would you say that the West can actually rely on Mohamed Morsi, as our guest there in Washington was saying, when it comes to its interests, economic and other, in Egypt?
Well, Mohamed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood spent a long time trying to reassure the West and America that things would be all right if they were given power. The problem for the West and for everyone else now is that if Morsi has to fight to win effective power and not just simply be someone who has office but has power, he is going to have to confront the military. And that requires returning to those forces which the Muslim Brotherhood were part of in the process of revolution which overthrew Mubarak, the left and so on. And these people understand that the military, the people who have been repressing the strikes, repressing the protests and so on, and they are going to be looking to end all military rule. I think they understand, I think there's a growing understanding in Egypt that really you cannot have a revolution and still have the military calling the shots. Military rule has got to be ended. And if Morsi takes that position, and that is the only effective position he can take if he wants real power in Egypt, that confrontation with the military is going to have to come. And if it comes, the West are going to be very worried about that in a country which they still see as key in the Middle East. So I think the West are becoming very worried about what is happening in Egypt, full stop. And the instability can spiral out of control as a result of the military trying to reimpose its authority.
Right. Chris Bambury, journalist, writer and broadcaster, joining us there live from London. Thank you very much. We've run out of time.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank our guest in Washington, former foreign policy advisor to the US Senate, Mr. James Jatras, and also with us live from Cairo, international lawyer Marwan al-Ash'al. Thank you very much for being with us, viewers. From me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran. Until our next program, it's goodbye.